Hey there, welcome to Conscious Living on Empower Radio. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Hope you're having a good day. And I'll go ahead and date this one. It's just beginning to feel like summer in Kansas City. And what that means is the temperatures are steadily being cooperative in terms of what summer should look like. This year has been so amazing all across the board with the weather. And it's just that thing. It affects us as we go about our lives, whether we have sunshine or clouds or whatever. And I like it all, but it's kind of nice just to get out and plant and be with the flowers, the birds, the bees, the trees, the grass, all that, and kind of get revitalized and refreshed. So I've been doing some lawn care, painting a fence and scraping and all that good stuff. And fortunately, I'm married. I have a partner who collaborates in this enterprise. But it's that sense of going through and looking at what I have seen and where I have been and deciding to get rid of things that no longer apply in my life. And doing that is synchronistic with the things that I've been drawn to, the interviews that I focus on. And one of the interviews, it's really cool because we have a similar background. And that in itself helps to kind of give us a place to start from. But I wanted to compare the contrast and the similarities. Her name is Alexis Brooks. Her book is Conscious Musings, so it's perfect for the show. And Conscious Musings, Contemplations to Transform Life and Realize Potential. So if you're following along, you can check it out on Amazon. You can check out her website as well. Higher Journeys is a blog spot. She also does shows on YouTube. So you can do your homework in the meantime. I'm going to talk with her, okay? Let's just do that first. Hi, Alexis.
Hello, Wendy. How are you? And happy summer.
Thank you. Yeah, I just thought, okay, if they're downloading this, whenever it is, it'll feel like summer.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so if you're listening along, yeah, we're celebrating summer and we're celebrating renewal, growth, the whole nine yards. It's all about that. And the book, basically, when you're going through and redoing and reviewing things about us in terms of how we used to think of ourselves and how we're kind of shifting that and allowing that there's a lot more going on than just the body. There's this wonderful spiritual component, this energy component. And the way you start things out when you say there's no other guru, stop looking outside for the guru. Maybe I'll start there.
Yeah. That phrase I've been using for quite some time, Wendy, and I do think, so many well-intentioned people are searching for a sense of spirituality. And the first sort of thing we feel we need to do is find a book, find a workshop, find a guru, and ignore what is really the inner guru. And I know that may sound cliche, but I really think that element has always been there in us, but atrophied for whatever reason. And so, we're in this business, we write books and we do radio shows, and that's all well and good. But my contention is, sure, read the book, go to the guru occasionally, but then shut the book, walk out of the workshop and just be by yourself and have that inner epiphany. If you give yourself the time to do so, I think you will have it.
Where did you start? What drew you to this?
Loaded question. And I always love when people ask me because it's a long story. I'll try to sum it up. You know, Wendy, I was blessed enough to be born into a family, my parents, an only child. My parents asked big questions, always. Now, they worked in the mainstream. My mother was an educator. My father, a left-brain scientist from MIT. But when they took that hat off, they would sit around the kitchen table and talk about the big questions and the big subjects like reincarnation and, the ET reality and life after death. And so when I became old enough to pull up a seat at the table, they would involve me in these conversations. So it was nurtured pretty early on. But, they say that each successive generation tends to get a little bit more gung-ho about whatever they're indoctrinated into. And I think that happened to me. I just became absolutely fascinated about the mysteries of the universe. And I always felt intuitively that there was a lot more to reality than what we had been taught in our high school science class. And so I sort of set out to find out what that looked like. I'm still trying to find out, but there's certainly a lot more than what meets the eye. And the act of exploration is absolutely fascinating to me. I wouldn't give it up for anything. So I think that's what kind of started me on my course. There's more to that, but we'll pause there for a minute.
Well, okay, let me give you another angle on more, because I had the conversations similar to that with my mom and my grandmother. And there was a sense, though, that when I was little, I had an imaginary friend. So I had another perspective from there. And then I had an incredible encounter when I was about 11 or 10, I can't remember, where I had this, basically, it was a beautiful awareness experience with the Holy Spirit. And it was just absolutely mind-boggling, because I didn't know really how to format it, how to frame it, what it was, except that I had been asked, do you accept the Holy Spirit? And I, well, of course, what's not to accept? It's cool. It's, you know, yeah, it's supposed to be good. And then all of a sudden I glowed. I had this incredible feeling, an infusion of warmth. Well, I also had experiences seeing ghosts and having other kinds of things. And what I did to get on with my life was to put that on the back burner, because I didn't really have a way to share that or to bring it up in polite conversation. You didn't talk about that kind of stuff, or at least in my area. And so there were groups you might have been able to attend, but this was all very under wraps, under lock and key. Even though I lived in Topeka, which was the home of the Menninger Foundation, and where they did all sorts of research and studies with gurus and people who could do things that were extraordinary, even now by our measures. So that for me turned me on to this.
Well, you know, you mentioned that, you know, many people, first of all, let's just say this. I believe that most, if not all, people have had an experience or two or even 10 that are considered anomalous. And I think there's several things that one will do. The first thing is, first, you've got to try to get your head around what just happened here, whether it's seeing the ghostly remnants of someone, your grandma, deceased grandma at the end of your bed, or something else. But I think that, unfortunately, because of the world that we are indoctrinated into, we are loath to talk about these things with family members, with friends, with strangers, for fear of ridicule. That's still going on today. And my contention in this book, and there's a whole section, as you know, called The Magic, Mystery, and Metaphysics of Potentiality, which basically covers the paranormal, but not just to shine a light on it from a novelty standpoint, but to look at these things and say, I don't think we can afford to ignore these anomalies anymore. They are giving us some intimation as to the vastness of ourselves, our consciousness, and how we're connected to so many different elements that typically we can't see, but every once in a while they bleed through. I think we're at a precipice where we can no longer afford to be shy about talking about these things. So that's a big subject. Boy, is that a big subject. I'd love to hear some of your stories, but yeah. And I've had some myself. Look, I think I've always had a proclivity to precognitive dreaming. You talk about how I got started in this. So, you know, I had my parents that were very nurturing as far as having these conversations were concerned. But coupled with that, I was having my own experiences, mostly in the form of precognitive dreaming, whether it was something mundane or life-changing. I remember having a dream prior to, I don't know if you recall, the Egypt Air plane crash that happened, I believe, in the early 90s. Very big news at the time. And about 2 days prior to the crash, I had a dream that I was on a flight abroad. I was on that flight. Although I don't recall it going down, I remember that it had the features of that same flight, and it was shattering to me. Well, 2 days later, the crash happened. This has been going on all throughout my life, but each time these things happen, I am determined to investigate what is going on here. What am I not getting about the true nature of reality? So it's kind of driven me through my course all my life.
Well, and when I get those kind of things, it's like, well, why did I clue into that one? It's like when the tsunami hit that morning, I had the dream, and I was aware this is really how reality works. It's so fluid. I was on a deck or a porch that overhung the water, but the water was almost even, you know, like maybe a foot below the deck. Beautiful area. And I remembered putting my cat in a crate, a carrier, and getting everything off the porch, seeing clouds coming in and hearing this ominous music like Jaws, this real intense theme music with the dark clouds coming in, and knowing that everything had to be taken off of the shore. Well, and then that morning, or that the news broke that the tsunami had hit and things changed. But I remember very clearly in the dream that warning and thinking, well, why did I need to know? And I think part of that is when these things happen, there's a dimension shift on a larger plane where there are ripples are going out from each of these events that are calling us to connect in ways that we know without knowing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's something that we call non-local reality. I believe that's a term that Dr. Larry Dossey coined. I actually interviewed him several months ago, which essentially says that there is some omnipresent field that we are somehow, our consciousness is connected to. Now, you asked the question, why would you give me a warning, a pre-warning for something that I probably won't be able to stop? I don't know that it is a warning per se, as much as that we are just by default tethered to this field. And, you know, these precognitions seem to be very arbitrary. And I think that can be another reason why people will have these experiences and decide not to look any further, because after all, what can I do about it? And I say, well, okay, you may not be able to stop the event, but at least take the dynamic of what's taking place here as an impetus to explore. If this is happening, what else am I capable of? If I am tethered to this omnipresent, omnipotent field, how might I bring it down to a practical level and apply it to my life? You know, there's something called practical intuition. Synchronicity is synchronicity. That's another, I love that topic of synchronicity. But again, all of these quote-unquote anomalies of nature are reminders that we are so much more. You've heard it. You've said it many times. So much more than we think we are. No doubt.
And part of that, too, is one of these larger events happen, at least it's been my experience, that there's a huge shift, like with 9/11 and in our part of the world, Katrina. When these things happened, there was a shift in that soul energy, that non-physical energy, and it was huge ripples, huge waves. And you talk to the people who are intuitives and who are helping to cross people over, as they term it, or kind of help sort and sift and separate, because we get, I think, sometimes overwhelmed as an empath with this energy that is all of a sudden in a state of flux. And if you don't recognize that, or you don't understand that that's a potential to happen, your reality gets rocked and you have no idea why. It's just chaos, random. And then when you realize, oh, this is what it was. This was the rock that hit the pond, and here's the water, and these are the waves coming in. At least that's how I've learned. At first, it was just a thing of, well, okay, this doesn't affect me. And then I started putting the things together and seeing, ah, this is shifting. It's like stirring the water. And so at first you have this, you know, it's muddy, and then it starts to become clear and calm again. But these things shift us as they shift those layers deep, deep, deep in the core.
You are obviously a very, very introspective individual, and I love it. And that's one of the things that I talk about in the book. This is the time, Wendy, that we must exercise what I call unbiased introspection. You know, we always, when an event happens, large or small, individual, micro or macro, we want to know why. And moreover, we want to know, how does it affect us? And the fact that you were able to sort of distill the symbology of these larger things happening and how they affect you, if nothing more than to remind us, again, that we are tethered to this continuum, is admirable. And I'm really urging people in this book to do just that. Take a snapshot, not only of the anomalous things, but the mundane things in our life, and really kind of examine, might my use of language, my habits, my routine be setting a template for reality? And if reality is plastic, which I happen to think it is, it's malleable, if I can shift that, and if I'm seeing these big things, what can I do just shifting my consciousness, my dialogue? I think the universe is truly, truly beckoning us. I think we may be running out of time. I don't want to sound like the Grim Reaper, but I think we can't afford to not have the perspective that you have. More of us need to get there. And I think we are.
Well, I do too. And I don't know that I look at it that final. I look at it as fluid, and that this is a shift. It's just an evolution. It's like a plant doesn't run out of time. It just shifts form. The thing is, we see it from one dimension and we think, oh, this is a beautiful plant. It's flowered, it's bloomed, and now it's back into dirt. But for me, that energy is ever present. It just manifests in a different form. And if we would like to change our present circumstances, like with the planet, there are some things we do have to acknowledge, that the things that we're doing in terms of environment and our practices with food, just, you know, the types of fertilizers we use, the chemicals that we're putting out there, they come back somewhere else. And eventually they're going to end up in us. So do we want that? And what happens when we continue to do that and all of a sudden, you know, turn into this toxic chemical soup of hybrid mutants? Maybe that's not a bad thing. I don't know. You know, okay. Where do we go from here? It comes back to center and you being your own guru.
That's right. You being your own guru. And again, I think we need to be gentle with ourselves, Wendy. You know, we're, us human beings have this habit of wanting to gun toward that destination. I got to get here. It's got to be final. You know, we just talked about the cyclical patterns of the universe and of life. I like to say it's not about the destination. It's about the journey. I know it's cliche, but let's be a little light on ourselves. Let's, you know, yes, we need to exercise responsibility and use discernment. But let's not beat ourselves up over this. This is a process, and it's an experiment. I think we're here not as the experiment, but we're the experimenter. So let's enjoy. You know, I heard you at the beginning talking about your garden and the fact that at least here in the Western Hemisphere, we're experiencing summer. What a great time to reflect. You talk about the plant that flowers and then dies, but it ultimately recycles. This is a great time to observe that process and remind ourselves that nature is more than a metaphor. It's a mirror. So we have so many beautiful things going on within the challenging times.
Well, you organize the book and you speak of a lot of their familiar names that you've interviewed. Of the interviews that you have done, and I was familiar with William Buhlman because I talked with him recently. We'll go back to that. But what might have been the one that was the most powerful for you in terms of having that discussion, that interaction, that exchange with somebody that maybe the rest of us would only see in the headlines?
Oh, boy. In terms of people that I've interviewed, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a load. Well, it's not a loaded question. There's just been so many people like you. We have the best job in the world, Wendy. We get to interview the most profound people with the most profound information. I can't really say that there has been one. It's been a tapestry of information. The fun part is putting it all together, whether you're talking to William Buhlman about out-of-body experiences. Obviously, he is astute when it comes to that, and he's an experiencer. There's PMH Atwater, who is a dear friend who's had three near-death experiences, Danion Brinkley, so many. What I will say, forgive me for skirting the question and coming up with one answer, but it's really about putting all of this information, whether we're talking about near-death experiences with PMH or The One Mind with Larry Dossey, or Shadow People with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who's a paranormal researcher. You put all these little pieces together and you see this cloth being created. Something's going on here. We've got a spectrum of reality that is truly infinite. I think that's what I've gotten out of interviewing all of these people.
You've had a laundry list of people whose names you would recognize. In the book, though, you do prefer, there are two or three times when you reference Rosemary Ellen Guiley.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So she must have had an impact.
Oh, sure. Well, I've known Rosemary, my gosh, since the mid to late 90s. In fact, I was in her book, Dream Work for the Soul, back in 1995, I believe, 96. So we've had a lot of conversations. And yes, she has been a major influence in my understanding of the paranormal. You know, she's a very astute, very intellectual person, also a very feeling person, but she's very bright about what she does, and she's very pragmatic, and that's convincing to me. You know, when people are, she's exploring these haunted locations and looking at the shadow person phenomenon. I don't know whether your listeners are familiar. I have a feeling many are. This seems to be a ubiquitous phenomenon. Talking about the geomagnetic field and the magnetosphere changing, all of these things. I'm kind of feeling what she's saying. I think there is something going on. The veil's thinning, and perhaps that's why spirit communication seems to be more prevalent right now. So she had a big impact on me, absolutely. Another individual that's mentioned in the book, who unfortunately I never had the opportunity to know, who's now deceased, is Michael Talbot, who wrote the book, The Holographic Universe, and his sort of word picture of the universe and our brains possibly operating as hologram, reality as being plastic. That was a huge influence on me and in writing this book. So Penny Pierce is another, who is a dear friend and mentor, who speaks of the intuition age. I mean, there's so many, but those are definitely three that were mentioned in the book.
Okay, fine. I just had to get you to throw a few out, all right?
Yeah, you got me. You got me. Oh, there's, and again, we have such an incredible community of individuals who have the courage of their convictions to explore these rather elusive subjects, that it wasn't difficult for me to find those people to bring into the book. Fortunately, I happen to know quite a few of them. I'm blessed for that. So many people have wonderful things to say, really.
Well, and that's the thing. When we're influenced, it's just, it just becomes part of our own template. And it's so fluid. The way that that happens, that when you interview somebody and you connect with them, it's like you absorb that energy, that element into a piece of you. And it really makes it hard to go back and separate what was the most valuable, because sometimes it can be so innocuous that when it comes back, it's like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. This I didn't even think about that. I wasn't right. ready to hear it at the time, or I wasn't working on that aspect. And then it comes back, and I'm so grateful that I had that interaction, that engagement, that connection to help me understand what's going on a little bit better.
Isn't that neat that you talk about going back in retrospect? You know, that's a big part of my consciousness arsenal, let's just say. You know, people or conversations that you've had years ago that perhaps you weren't fully grasping, you were still kind of connected to it, but weren't fully grasping. And then 10 years later or so, whatever, you have this epiphany because now you can put it in a bit of a context. And all of those things are important, looking back in retrospect and saying, now I think I understand. That's
basically neat. It's like having stepping stones. And you go back and you do the work, and then you're ready for the stepping stones. And all of a sudden, they're right there, and you had no idea you had done the advanced layout.
Right. I love it. That's very true. Beautiful.
Okay, the book, again, we're talking about is Conscious Musings with Alexis Brooks. And one of the stories in there that you share is one, and I'm very, very connected to animals. And that.
Why did I know you were going to bring this up? Go for it, Wendy.
Well, it's just from the time I was a kid, you know. I think the power of animals to reach us in ways that other human beings can't is built in. It's meant to be that way, so that we can expand our horizons and get out of our little human box to understand that the rest of the world is also working on its own ascension process. But you talk about the cat that you absolutely adored, and then had to say goodbye to. And what happened after that is where you really, really made some tremendous, I think, connections that wouldn't have happened without the passing of your cat.
That is such a loaded story. I love telling this story. And I'm going to try to, because I know we may be moving toward break soon. But
well, yeah. I'll tell you, okay. So let's just go ahead and preface it with maybe what animals you had before, because we're about 2 minutes away from the break, and then we'll get into the details. So your connection with animals.
Right. Well, I had and believe I have now, a white Persian kitty named Paws. We had him for close to 15 years and we lost him. I'm going to preface it and then we can elaborate on the back end. Something magnanimous happened that I would never have imagined in my wildest dreams in terms of this kitty being omnipresent in my life. I'm going to leave it there, I think, because it's a loaded story. We're talking about the possible reincarnation of our animal companions. And I do have a chapter in the book in which I talk about the phenomenon of animal reincarnation based on what I believe is a firsthand account of such a phenomenon.
Okay. And I agree. I think that's just part of it. We are all basically energy and we come here in a unique form, whether it happens to be a plant, an animal, something that we don't consist of in a physical form, which could be air, fire, water, elements. These things I've experienced in my own journey. So I'm not just saying, I think it might be. It's, I know, I have been, I have done, and I believe. So that's the way I look at it. It's not something I'm dissecting and saying, okay, here, let's poke the potato and see if we can get cut it open, see what's inside. No, no, this helps to have been there and felt these things and had these experiences so that when you talk to people who bring their own truth to the equation, you can say, ah, got it. Hey, yeah. Sister. Hey, brother. Hey. Okay, so that's just to set that up with the story that we're going into. So what the deal is I've had my own pet experiences and watched this transition phase from many different angles. And some were very, very difficult. But when things like this happen, it makes you feel better about the whole of life and knowing that everybody has an end point. But the amazing thing is when you see the rebirth, the re-entry, and the transition and understand a larger knowing. So we're talking again with Alexis Brooks. Alexis, your story about the cat, we're going to bring up after the break, okay? Because this is really so cool. So if you're listening and you have animal companions, all right, pay attention. This might be something that will happen or has happened to you. So you're not alone. And they are such great teachers. Great teachers. Conscious Living on Empower Radio. You can check us out on the internet. We're at iTunes, iHeartRadio, and on Empower Radio. And thank you for tuning in. This is a story I love, and I think you will too.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over a million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold.
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Poor Johnny, still stuck in that well. Till he learns to be more self-reliant. That's kind of what we're talking about. Be your own guru. I don't know how long those little PSAs are going to air, but they're certainly delightful. And they always happen. I don't know if it's synchronistically one of those little things where we're talking about animals. And there we go at the end of the break. It's never planned out. So don't even think that I go there. It just happens all by itself. It's perfect. So poor little Johnny, he'll eventually find his way out of that well. Alexis, I really think that animals are our best teachers, and I'm probably biased because they've been teaching me since I was old enough to latch on to my first horse. But in your book, Conscious Musings, you deal specifically with your cat, and it's a very, I love it because it connects dots.
You and I share this as well, Wendy. They are our best teachers, and I think there are a lot of people that realize that. Look, if there's nothing else, they teach unconditional love. They teach unconditional love, and I really feel that it was in part that unconditional love that brought my kitty back. Let's see if I can sum this up, because like I said, it's a big story. My husband and I had a cat named Paws, a white Persian fluffy, beautiful little kitty, just absolutely intuitive, docile, you name it. He was just an angel. Well, he had been failing in health. He'd been close to 15 years old, and we knew that it probably wouldn't be long. But nonetheless, I had flown out along with my husband to Los Angeles from the Boston area to cover the Conscious Life Expo and do a series of interviews. And it was while we were there, I'm going to fast forward, but while we were there that, in fact, the day we were to fly back, that we got a call from the veterinarian back here in Boston saying that he probably wasn't going to make it. We wouldn't see him again. And lo and behold, he did pass while a caretaker, was cradling him. It's ironic because while on that trip, I had interviewed Dr. Bruce Goldberg, who is a well-known hypnotherapist and past life regressionist. And synchronistically, although at the time Paws hadn't passed, this was a few days before we were to leave, we had been talking about what he felt was the reincarnation of his dog. He also talked about a client that he had who he claimed to reunite in sort of out of the body state with a dog that she had lost, and subsequently dog came back. Well, that in and of itself is a loaded question, but I feel that may have been a little bit of a precursor as to what I would experience. Well, fast forward about 9 months. Of course, I'm devastated over the loss of this cat. Oh, crying, grieving incredibly. And, there were a series of dreams that I had had. One was a dream that I had, maybe 2 weeks after he had passed. I saw him. I was coming out of the bathroom and I opened the door and there he was, like he always was. And Wendy, he spoke to me as if he were human. He says, you're grieving so much, you're driving me nuts. I had to come back to let you know it's okay. I'm with my mother. I'm with my mother, he said, speaking to me as if he were human. I said, well, okay, you're with your mother. I understand that. You've reunited with her in the afterlife. So that, let's park that for a minute because we'll come back to the relevance of that. About 9 months later is when I thought about perhaps getting another kitty. For some reason, I had this sense that I needed to get a Himalayan this time. There was a dream that was attached to that, but I don't know if we have time to get into that. But I had in my mind that we were going to get this tan and brown, blue-eyed, Blue Point, I think they're called, or Seal Point Himalayan cat. And his name would be Perkins, clear to me. So I proceed to look at different breeders, and I'm looking, to see if I could see this image of a Himalayan in my head. And lo and behold, I went to one breeder, looking for this Himalayan. And what do I see is a little white doll-faced Persian named Clover. And a shiver ran through me one day. I said, oh my gosh, this looks just like Paws. I immediately went downstairs to see my husband, showed him the picture, and here's what he said. Oh my gosh, it's Paws. Well, one thing led to another. Fast forward, although I hadn't been looking for another white Persian, call the breeder, get the details. Is the cat still available? Yes, he is. She said, as a matter of fact, he's the last one in his litter. I have no idea. There's nothing wrong with him, but I have no idea why he's not been picked up yet. His two sisters have been adopted already. So I said, give me a few details about this kitty. She says, well, he's pure white, Persian, but he was born with a little gray patch on the top of his head. I said, well, that's interesting. My Paws was born with a little gray patch on the top of his head. She said, which was fading, like my cat's stated. She said he's the only male born in his litter. And I said, that's interesting. My paws was the only male born in his litter. But then here's the kicker. She said he was born on February 16th. Paws died within hours of Clover being born. And that's when I knew, okay, something really bizarre is going on here. Well, needless to say, we got the cat. I think it was a thing we had to do. There's so much more, but those were the three main things that said there is something going on here. Now, again, I had absolutely no, I had not made a request. Please bring my paws back in a reincarnated body. None of that hadn't even entered my mind. And my husband, who doesn't, he's certainly not as voracious about investigating these things as I am. He felt immediately that this was paws. Well, we finally get the kitty, bring him into the home. He flew in from, matter of fact, I think he came from your area.
That's what I thought, yeah.
No, Kansas City. He came from Kansas City. We brought him in. Brought him in. And the moment he, it took him a few minutes to acclimate and realize he had just had a plane flight and was in a new home. But as soon as he got out of his cage and started sniffing around, he went immediately to paws his favorite chair. Immediately. Well, needless to say, there have been a string and still are a string of synchronicities that tell me there is something going on here. Could this kitty named Paws have re-entered this new kitty's body? They look exactly alike. Let me not forget that little detail. They look exactly alike. They act exactly alike. He's still sort of, personality traits are emerging that Paws had. By the way, we've now named him Clover Paws. You know, there's something else I want to bring up that I didn't put in the book, and I wish I had, but I'm gonna tell you about this.
Yeah.
I gave a talk. Let me just say, subsequently, I got so immersed in this idea of animal reincarnation and the possibility. Still hasten to say this is what it is, because it may be something even bigger. But I got very, very interested in the subject matter. So I gave a talk on it in November, and this past November. And as I was gathering material for my presentation, I started looking, obviously I wanted to give visual evidence of how much these two kitties looked alike. And I found a picture that I had taken of Paws back in 1996 or 97 or so. Now listen to this one. He's sitting in a bookcase. You know how cats love to get into things. They love to get into boxes and bookcases. Well, this picture was of him in a bookcase. Wendy, every book that surrounded him spoke to me. It said, I'm trying to think of some of the titles that he was nestled next to in the book. We Don't Die. Spirit Speak. Chicken Soup for the Soul. These were all books. Reunions was another one that dealt with the afterlife. Every book on that shelf, there were probably 10 or 15. I'll even send you the picture. You'll know exactly what I'm talking about. As if you talk about retrosynchronicity, I did not recognize the message coming from that picture until I was gathering material for this presentation. You know, there was a part of me that said, could it be, I spoke to the universe, could it be that my pause is Clover Paws now? I still have that little bit of question. Mm-hmm. And it's still showing me signs, even though that picture was taken in the 90s, that yes, there's something going on here. The spirit has come back to you. It's amazing to me.
See, the way I reconcile some of this is that there was the little cue. It was subtle. It made no sense at the time. It was so subtle as to be innocuous. It didn't register. And then going back and looking, it's like it was foreshadowing.
Absolutely.
And because you are so vocal and you are so prolific and you are so persistent and dogged with this issue and with this content, it gave you a way to bring through something tangible. And Paws is doing his own best to help you, to assist you, because it works and it's real. And this makes it manifest, where before it's all conjecture and all supposition. But when we really are able to create and engage our awareness into a manifest state or point of expression, then we have some kind of evidence some kind of a story that makes sense with a reference for others to look at and then say, well, do I believe it or not? It doesn't matter whether they do, because we've already manifested it for ourselves. We know our own truth. And
absolutely.
I think Pause is your accomplice.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think you're correct in that. And I think you said a key word, Wendy. You said engage. And I talk about this a lot. Look, you know, I really, really feel that the universe is alive. It is a conscious entity. And I do feel it has our best interest at heart, even though it can be a trickster at time. It definitely speaks metaphorically. But if you engage that, again, omnipotent energy and sort of learn its language, it will see you clearly and bring you these things. Yeah, you know, I am dogged. I am persistent. I'm clear that there's much more to the spectrum of reality than we know. And so when you are like yourself, you will be presented with these incredible experiences. Imagine, you have to see this picture. There have to be a dozen books in there, and every single title in some way. It's almost as if the universe is saying, why do you continue to ask? I'm telling you, this is how it works.
Well, and it gives you right there. They're all in writing, which
in
we're
writing,
so, you know, we want this concrete. Give me proof. Give me proof. And still people will say, oh, yeah, you just made it all up.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that's so nice that you've chosen to believe that. Oh, it's OK. I understand. You'll be fine. And that's the thing. If you're ready and if you're doing this process, then you get it for yourself. That's the guru thing. It's not saying I'm better than, it's saying, ah, I am present. Yes, this is me when I am engaged. I don't need somebody else to validate it and say, look, see this? See this? It happened. Come on. You don't have to prove it. The beauty of this is there's no judgment anymore. You look at other people and you say, ah, that's where you are. Okay, that's cool.
Right.
It's okay. It's okay not to be where I am. It's okay not to believe what I believe, because we all have to start somewhere. And I didn't start where I am.
Absolutely right. We're in some pretty elusive work. I mean, it's esoteric. And I, you know, me personally, I am not really out to prove anything to anyone. I don't think life is about proving. Life is about experiencing and experimenting. And I think just by virtue of walking that walk, walking your talk, you're going to magnetize the people that are, that are somewhat open to these things to help them on their own journey. Really relax. I'm not really too concerned with proving or, you know, gaining believers. In fact, I like to say, I don't believe in anything. I either know it or I don't. And the only way I'm going to know it is to experience it. One of my quotes that I probably will botch, I'll say you know, seeing is believing, but experiencing is knowing. Seek to know, and you will never have to believe again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again.
And that makes so much sense to me. It has a lot to do with, and the reason I brought that proving thing up, there was a consciousness group I saw on LinkedIn this morning, and one of the posters said, prove to me that you don't die, that consciousness lives beyond the body. Prove that. Show me some proof. And I'm like, you know, there will be tons and tons of comments from other people trying to bring the proof or dispute the proof or say that the proof is beyond us. And at the same time, that person has already stated, show me.
Right.
Well, he has to show himself.
That's right.
That's the way it works.
Yeah, that's the way it works. And, you know, it's funny. I say that seek to you know, find the experience and you'll never have to believe again. You know, there are people that have experiences, Wendy, but they're still so habituated to a worldview that is counter to that, they still won't believe it. Let me give you a quick example, if I may, of one of those situations. A dear friend of mine who I love dearly, I won't mention her name just in case she's listening, but she came to visit an old college friend that came into town from Atlanta to visit. She's bringing her son to college in the fall. And she's reading my book, and she says, you know, Alexis, I love the book, but I got to this point, something scared me, and I had to close the book. I said, what on earth in this book would scare you? Well, I knew in the back of my mind it had to be something about in the paranormal section. And I said, well, we'll call her Lisa. I said, Lisa, why would you be frightened about anything that's in the book? She says, because some of these stories, I've had these same experiences, and I actually do believe, so I can't look. And I thought, isn't that some great info? You know,
well, it's a real contradiction of what you would think, because there's that fear of, I don't want to know this is real, because as long as it isn't real and I'm just imagining it, I don't have to deal with it. And I can keep my neat and tidy view of the world.
That's right. Yeah. Well, guess what? I don't think that's going to hold up much longer.
You,
I really
you exposed
don't.
Her and I haven't had a chance that's threatening.
Talk about the shift. This word that we've been using, this shift in consciousness, this shift in paradigm, whether it be exoteric or esoteric, I believe that a lot of people are sensing that there's a shift going on right now. And my contention in this book and in my speaking is that universe, we may not be able to ignore this stuff much longer, because this shift may require us to raise our consciousness to a more universal level in order to go with it, not against it.
Well, I think in going back to the friend that you're talking about, we are around people who are going through these same things. And sometimes we are in their hemisphere, their environment, their space, so that it gives them permission to gently and delicately and non-threateningly expose more of their own light, their own being, their own essence, because it's familiar to somebody else that they trust. And so with you being one of her friends, she can admit to you, oh my gosh, I am afraid. That's a tough thing for some people to really deal with, their own fear of being more than what they thought they were.
Right. Yeah. Well, then other people tell me I'm afraid of this, that, you know, I'm scared of this stuff, so I don't look. I nudged her. I said, okay, Lisa, we'll call her. She says, because I've had these experiences. I said, well, oh, I'd love to hear one. No, I can't. I can't go there. I was able to get one experience out of her, and it was what I would call a classic experience of she thought she was dreaming, but then realized that she was wide awake where she saw her deceased grandmother at the end of her bed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that could shake us up a little bit, because we don't understand what's going on here. But there is a phenomenon that I think is worth exploring, even if we don't find the ultimate answer. The investigation of reality is important. It's important. And so I really tried my best to, although I got her to tell me the story, what I really tried to do is get her to relax into, this reality that's so much bigger than she wants to think. And I think she's kind of getting there.
Well, and see, this is what's so amazing. There's tons of information now, as opposed to 30, 20, 10 years ago on this topic, because we've got people like Robert Monroe. We've got people who have been out there searching and seeking PMH Atwater and prolifically writing about it. Before then, I think it was like Ruth Montgomery. You know, there was limited, but some access. And now it's almost mainstream, you know, when you're seeing this, and still people are just beginning to stick their toe in the water.
But that's better than sitting on the sitting pool side without getting wet at all.
Well, you know, you can get a tan.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I'm gonna tan. I'm gonna bask in the afterglow of the enlightened. How's that?
I love it.
Well,
no,
that's
I don't
okay.
know.
It's okay. It's we're here, and this is a great time to experience this.
Right. Oh, it's a great time. And I think we are, I mean, you can see with alternative media, the burgeoning interest in these subjects coming through alternative media. You know, I came from the mainstream of media, radio and television back in the 80s. Never did I imagine in my wildest dreams that 20 some years later or more, almost 30 years later, that we would be seeing this subject covered so ubiquitously through what we call alternative media. So I am really excited about that. We're moving.
I was doing talk radio in the morning in 1997 when it was a challenge to get Wayne Dyer in the, you know, on the air. And one of my cohorts interviewed Marianne Williamson. And we did Marianne Williamson. He interviewed Shirley MacLaine, and she she trounced him. it wasn't pretty. But he was a little bit more harsh with her than one might expect, and she was harsh right back.
Yeah.
Dished him some of his own medicine, and that's the thing about that. At that time, was people would tend to poke fun or try to belittle or diminish this stuff. And it was so incredibly powerful. And right there at the very beginning of an awareness that a lot of people were undergoing this and having huge transformational experiences and transcendent experiences as part of the process. And they didn't take guff from anybody.
Yeah. Well, I have to give it to Shirley MacLaine. I can see the cover of the book Out on a Limb right now. And boy, did she go out on a limb.
Yes.
With convictions and took chances. But like you said, she gave it to him. I think she set a template. She really did. And there have been so many. But she was certainly one of the pioneers in bringing out this idea of reincarnation. So
well, as a strong personality, she had the chutzpah to go and say, I had it. I know it. It's real. Get over yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's the attitude you have to have. I mean, you don't want to be indignant with people. But again, if you just, you know, say to yourself, I'm not really concerned. You know, here's the other thing with me, Wendy. I have never been concerned about being ridiculed about these things. First of all, I try to be as learned as I can and as practical as I can within the spectrum of what we're talking about as I'm presenting it. So I try not to present it in a woo-woo fashion, but even a quasi-academic where appropriate fashion. And I'm confident, first of all, I'm confident in the phenomenon in and of itself, but I'm somewhat confident in the way I present it. So I'm not really concerned about what people think.
That's part of it.
To worry about what other people are thinking.
It's that ego thing that, you know, I need to protect who I am. It's like, no, there's no protection necessary. I am one way or the other. I am. That's not going away. The cool thing, though, is when, like with the book, and we're talking about Conscious Musings with Alexis Brooks, you've laid it out. It's a very simple and I think effective presentation of some of the names that we would recognize in the mainstream New Age today. Greg Braden's in there. You're talking about William Buhlman. You're talking about Rosemary Ellen Guiley. I can't say it too fast or I lose part of her name. But one of the quotes in here from, is it William James? I'm thinking that was one of my favorite quotes. And the only one I turn to is the only journey is the journey within. Okay, well, fine. That trumped the other one. But the stuff that we're doing right now is really, I think, powerful in terms of getting each and every one of us to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's so many things that can be done, you know, both individually and collectively. And I do try to lay that out in the book. The last section of the book deals with, you know, kind of more of the productive side of Conscious Musings. Now that we've pounded the pavement with a life review of human behavior and habits, we've looked at the paranormal. Now what can we do? How can we put this to work? I talk about heart-based meditations that can be used. I talk about, I have a conversation with Penny Pierce about the imaginal realm and how the imaginal realm is not imaginary at all. This is a term that was, I believe, coined by a man named Henri Corbin about the imaginal being another level of reality that we interact with, that we are tethered to, that we can engage and actually learn to manifest based on, you know, what we create in that realm. So, yeah, it's lots of different little nuggets in there. Talk about dreams. Dreams is a big deal for me, and it's a smorgasbord of not just information, but problem solving. And I talk about Harriet Tubman and how a lot of people don't realize that she used her psychic dreams to help free the slaves. Talk about Paul McCartney and how I believe it was a song yesterday came to him in a dream. Dreams are meant to be utilized. They're meant for a lot of things, but so much we can do, Wendy, as you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. We're going to have to wrap up because I've got 2 minutes left. The book Conscious Musings is available now. You can get it at Amazon and it's Alexis Brooks. You can also check out Alexis's website and Higher Journeys. I'm sorry. Yeah. Higher Journeys, right?
Higher Journeys.
Yes.
That's right.
Okay.
And
I found
show.
The quote.
The William James quote, because I think it's so appropriate for what we're talking about in terms of jumpstarting people. The greatest revolution of our generation is the discovery that human beings, by changing their inner attitudes of their minds, can change the outer aspects of their lives. It starts within. It's all here. Never lost.
Beautiful. And I think it's true. I think the inner creates the outer. The outer is the mirror for the inner. So, yes, very poignant.
On your journey, what's next?
On my journey?
Yes.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I will be I actually just finished interviewing Stephen Halpern, the great New Age recording artist Stephen Halpern. It was talk to him about the dynamics of sound and the human condition, yet another tool that I believe still goes underutilized. So we'll be talking about how sound can affect us both positively and negatively, unfortunately. That's coming up on my Conscious Inquiry radio program, I believe later today it will be airing. And, you know, I'm just doing the book thing, Wendy, trying to keep the message out there and doing a bit of traveling and speaking about it, meeting great people like yourself. It's just, you know, I have the best job on the planet. We have the best job on the planet. Yes.
I think so. Somebody asked me what I do for a living and I'm like, I hadn't thought about that. I just live. I don't do something. I just live being doing. It's a great way to, I think, share all of this stuff that's going on in our consciousness as we evolve into that higher knowing, higher being state. Alexis, I appreciate everything you're doing. I hope to talk with you again too. And you know, have you checked out Jonathan Goldman?
I haven't.
More sound.
Okay.
He started out as a DJ.
Uh-huh.
So it was like, just like, you know, Robert Monroe.
Yeah. Yes. With Hemi Fink.
Uh-huh. We start out and we have no idea where what direction it's going to take us, and then end up in this incredible, I think, awareness that everything here is a playground. It's all meant to connect us at the beginning, where we didn't have any idea what we were jumping into when we started, to connection. We thought we were separated. And in the end, you find out, oh my gosh, I wasn't separated. I'm still in the middle of all of this. It never left. You just have to learn to pay attention and connect your dots.
You do. How fun. Life's a journey. Fun.
So again, if you're listening, Higher Journeys website, blog, the shows are on YouTube. So you can check that out. And that's under Higher Journeys YouTube Consciousness Corner. And there's a lot of good shows to check out. The one with Lulu Mace,
Must say.
She didn't seem to be too upset when I called her Mace. Must say. Was the American, you know. Oh, whoops. So anyway, so check out the shows, and wherever you are, whatever you're doing, have a wonderful, wonderful experience discovering, being, remembering, empowering you. Alexis, thank you.
Thank you.